Today is Tuesday, May the 10th. We are opening a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 5046, the legislative branch agencies. And we're going to start this morning with Mr. Henderson.
Madam Chair.
Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Dave Henderson, the legislative administrator. Happy to be here this morning. You should have the book that includes the presentation for legislative administration and the legislative assembly. And I'm just going to start at the front and work my way through there. And obviously, if you have any questions, just jump right in.
Before you begin, we are also noticed for public testimony today, so not knowing who all is going to sign up, we'll take a break at 9, just see who signed up. I want to make sure that we give folks ample opportunity to testify, so we'll do that break.
I'm sure Mr. Hazelwood would love to testify at that.
I saw Mr. Hazelwood signing in, and we'll make sure that we accommodate him in getting up to testify. So, now.
Very good. Behind the first tab, which says Legislative Administration Presentation, you'll see the outline, table of contents there. And jumping right up to page one, let me just read the mission statement that our agency developed. We put this together with the help of a facilitator working with our leadership team about 5 years ago. And our mission statement reads, legislative administration supports the Oregon legislature, promotes access to the legislative process, and provides efficient, effective, accountable, and customer-oriented services to all legislators, legislative departments, the public, and other government agencies. We have established within our long-term strategic plan three broad areas in which we have goals that we measure against, and those broad areas are customer service, upgrading the capital facilities, and upgrading access to information by the public and legislators. Some of the specific things that we've done in customer service are to establish and maintain our website, as well as establishing a legislative liaison function in the administrator's office. We've put in a self-help area in employee services and just a number of broad areas that we've addressed customer service. Within capital facilities, we've undertaken a number of projects to upgrade the capital itself. The most recent one, which you may have noticed, was the renovation of hearing rooms A through F, the Galleria, and the Capitol Gift Shop. Right now, we're in the process of upgrading the old manual elevator and replacing it with an automatic elevator, and we'll move to the other elevator. So there are a number of facilities projects that we've undertaken.
There was some question about whether or not you had disabled one of the elevators on the Senate side in anticipation of your budget to make the case for why you needed additional financial support. I'm giving you this opportunity to dispel that cynical rumor.
Madam Chair, I wish we were that creative.
Do you have a master plan that is owned by someone, your shop or the foundation, or someplace that speaks to the sequence of the repairs that you would make in this building?
Madam Chair, we do. Within facility services, we've developed a long-term facilities upgrade plan that includes items such as the elevator upgrades and everything else, and it runs out for a period of about 10 years. And we have presented that to the Legislative Administration Committee on occasion over the last several years. They've seen
And is that the forum in which projects come forward or are prioritized and vetted?
Yes, ma'am. The third broad area that we work in goal establishment and our work is in increasing access to information. To accomplish that, about 5 years ago, we undertook a technology transition program to move off of our old legacy mainframe system and move to open architecture systems that are easier for the public to access, easier for our staff to maintain, and we're about two-thirds of the way through that project. Moving to page two, some historical perspective for legislative administration. The Legislative Administration Committee was established in 1969. It currently consists of 9 members. It is co-chaired by the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House. The President appoints 3 additional Senate members, and the Speaker appoints 4 additional House members. And that committee meets on a somewhat irregular basis throughout the interim, generally, to consider issues relating to all the functions under legislative administration. Our programs, we have five specific program areas in addition to the administrator's office. Within the administrator's office, we're in charge of the overall functioning of the agency. We have a project coordinator position that is a person who works on a variety of projects throughout the biennium, probably the most critical of which is staff training and orientation, which takes place every 2 years before the start of a session. This person also coordinates the activities of the Oregon State Capital Foundation, maintains our blood drive that we do with the American Red Cross, and any variety of other special projects that we take on. We have within the office the web editor. This is a person who spends full time maintaining the legislative web page. He works with all of the 90 legislators as well as all of the other legislative offices to keep the information on that current. In conjunction with that, we established a legislative liaison position, which is more of a concept than it is a person. We took an easy-to-remember phone number, and we've publicized it for legislators and for members of the public to take advantage of, and we established a web address for people to send in any inquiries. If they didn't know exactly where it should go, they come into a specific web address.
Senator Morsette, would you remind me of that easy-to-remember number that I can't think of right now?
Madam Chair, Senator Morsette, that would be 986-1000.
Very good. Thank you.
And let me understand, that when you say this is a concept rather than a person, someone in your shop is charged with picking up the recordings on that telephone? Or describe this a little bit more.
Madam Chair, when the legislative liaison position was established, we had a person who took on the functions of being the web editor and being a person who would actually go out and speak with civic groups, would go with legislators to town hall meetings, to demonstrate access to the web applications that we have online. That person subsequently left, but we didn't want to give up the actual function that that person was performing. So within my office, we basically divided those duties up among all the people in my office. So we're still covered. We have the liaison concept of being available to go out and reach out to the public, but we don't have a specific person who has that title.
What happened to the position?
The position was actually a position in my office that we were using to create that. It was a position that had been vacant, and we put someone into it.
And the someone left.
The someone left, and now the web editor is in that same position. Also within the administrator's office is visitor services. This is the operation that you all know as the folks who bring you notice that you've got a group from your district that's in the Senate or House gallery and you want to introduce. They also do all of the tours, building tours, and they are the people who are at the doorkeepers in the chambers during floor sessions. It's a paid staff of only 3 continuing people. We've got 4 or 5 part-time tour guides, and then we've got a group of 48 volunteers who come in and provide thousands of hours of support. So it's a very lean operation that gets most of its work done through volunteers. In conjunction with visitor services is the Capital Gift Shop, which was expanded during the 2001-03 interim to allow for handicap access and also to increase the actual space of items that we can display for sale in there.
Dave, what relationship does any of your shop have with the staffing in the House and the Senate, the folks that serve on the floor?
Madam Chair, we have no direct relationship. We work with them. A lot of times the floor staff will be assigned to hearing rooms to act as messengers, but that floor staff actually works for the clerk of the chief clerk of the House or the secretary of the Senate. So they are not employees of legislative administration. They're employees of the assembly.
What I'm getting at is that there seem times when they're terribly busy when the floors are going, and other times when they don't seem as busy, and I didn't know what effort had been made to for your shop to reach out to them or for the clerk or the secretary to reach out to you to see if their skills and talents could be employed in other ways during the day.
Madam Chair, we do work with the chief clerk and the secretary of the Senate on that, and as I said, the floor staff are at times assigned to hearing rooms to be available to run errands for any members or anyone in the hearing rooms. But I do also know that the clerk and the secretary like to have at least one or two people in the chambers at all time because there's such a volume of visitors through there. They want to have somebody with some eyes on the chambers just to make sure that there's nothing inappropriate happening. Proceeds from the gift shop go to enhance the capital as some examples of what the money has been used for. You may have noticed that we have new folding chairs that we use in the rotunda now for activities there. Those were all purchased with gift shop proceeds. We have the electronic reader board outside of the near the kiosk that tells what activities are going on in the building. That was purchased with gift shop proceeds. There are stairs at the top of the dome near the Gold Man so that people can actually climb up and see over the edge without risking falling over the edge. That was all done with gift shop proceeds. The large screen TV.
And the sincere appreciation of your lawyers.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. The next office that I'll talk about is committee services. This is the office that provides staffing to all of the standing committees during both the session and the interim. In addition to the manager, we've got a supervisor who oversees the committee assistants. We've got 8 continuing committee administrators that have been with us. We have 3 vacant administrator positions right now. They're filled for session, but the continuing positions have been vacant. During the last interim, we had 2 employees move to other agencies and a 3rd retire. So we left those positions vacant to see if we could cover the committees, and we were able to do so. We've got 5 continuing committee assistants, and they're pretty busy throughout the time, whether it be session or the interim. In addition to that, committee services staffs the legislative library, which is really a reference room where members of the public and lobbyists and staff and legislators can go and get information. We've actually got 4 PCs in the library that are in fairly constant use during the legislative session, people going out and checking on things there. Information systems is the office that maintains all of the computer systems in the Capitol that are legislative computers. We don't do governor, secretary of state, or treasurer, but we maintain the legislative network, the web access that we have there, all of the mainframe functions that continue to be done, as well as maintaining the network and all of the PCs in all of the offices.
Dave, I understand why you wouldn't do treasurer, secretary of state, or the governor from the, I don't know how to make this separation. Technically, if there was one system, you could segregate them in a way, could you not, that recognized the appropriate separations but still had one computer system for this building? Are you telling us that they maintain their own? I'm just trying to find savings or integration or some way that you could appropriately make the separation but run it out of one shop. It's in a single building.
Madam Chair, I believe in all likelihood we could technically do that. The question would be, for confidentiality reasons, would those other offices wish to do that?
Okay.
In addition to operating all of the computer systems, the information systems staff runs the closed-circuit television system in the building, which allows people on the Capitol Mall and in the building to observe hearings that are going on in all of the hearing rooms in the Capitol, as well as the activities in the chambers, and any news conferences that take place or special events, we'll cover those. They maintain all of the sound and audio equipment in all the hearing rooms. So the tape recorders, the microphone systems, all of that is maintained through our information systems office. Facility services is the office that is responsible for the building itself, for maintenance of the Capitol, whether that be Plumbing issues, HVAC issues, electrical issues, anything of that nature is handled through facility services. This includes any upgrades that we're able to undertake internally, and any remodeling or renovation that goes on in the building. They also staff legislative publications and distribution, which is down in room 49, which is where the bills come in every day. They're collated, and then they're delivered to the desks for distribution to the members. Office supplies are available there. The public goes there to pick up bill copies and information.
Those people are always extraordinarily helpful.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm pleased to hear that. It is a good group of people, and they pride themselves in working closely with the members. Employee services is the HR office within legislative administration, providing HR functions to the entire legislative branch. That includes payroll, recruitment, benefits administration, personnel files, training. Anything at all relating to human resources is handled in that office. And then the fifth functional office is financial services, which provides accounts payable and accounts receivable for administration, the assembly, fiscal, and revenue. They provide budgeting services for your offices. That's where your monthly status report comes from, and all of the accounting that is done for the for administration and the assembly is done through financial services. There are two task forces which are within the legislative administration budget, the Western States Forestry Task Force and the Pacific States Fishery Task Force. These were both created in 1985 by resolution, and they were, for whatever reason, placed within the legislative administration budget. We don't do anything other than maintain the budget for those offices. The President and Speaker are in charge of appointments.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Will you have any involvement with the Public Commission on the legislature yet to be formally appointed?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, we're working with the President's and Speaker's offices on that to provide staffing for it. What we believe will happen is that one of our continuing committee administrators will be the lead staff person on that, and then we'll probably hire a committee assistant, and we will coordinate that through our office.
Dave, has any consideration been given to why these task forces, they've been there since 1985. Any thought to refreshing why they're there? Is there a smarter place for them to be? If I understood your explanation correctly, they're just line items in your budget. You don't do anything specifically to them.
Madam Chair, we have not assessed the effectiveness or anything of that nature. We have suggested at times that perhaps the Legislative Assembly budget would be a more logical place for them to be. But as far as any kind of value assessment of the
tax... Oh, no, I wasn't asking value assessment. I was just asking what sense does it make to have them there.
Madam Chair, they could be in the assembly budget just as easily.
Okay.
Moving along to page 7, item number 3 is a discussion of some project proposals that we've got. The budget that we submitted was an essential budget level budget. The Legislative Administration Committee during the last interim appointed a work group to look at the administration budget and the assembly budget so that the budget that was submitted had input from the members before it actually was submitted to BAM. So the budget that went in, that work group, which was 3 legislators participated in that, decided it would be best to submit the essential budget level budget and not do any option packages with it. We had developed 3 option packages that the group looked at, and there was consensus that they were good projects, but as I said, the decision was let's put the budget in at the central level rather than with the option packages. Let me just run over those packages so that you can know what it is that we would like to see funded. The first one is the electrical gearbox or distribution panel replacement. The electrical distribution system in the building is 68 years old, as is the, or 67 years old, as is the building. It has outlived its useful life, and there are issues with it as far as breaker panels and that we brought in an engineer to look at it, and they didn't even want us to turn off breakers because they were fearful of what would happen if we turned them back on. It is time that this system be replaced. It handles all of the power that comes into the old portion of the building, and it's right over there under the treasurer's office. So we have developed a plan, working with the engineers, to build in place in a room adjacent to the existing equipment, new equipment. At the time that that construction was completed, we could use a couple of weekends to switch over to the new equipment. If we wait until the old equipment fails, we're looking at probably about 6 months of downtime of having no power in the old portion of the building. So we feel it's very important to replace this equipment.
And the downside is what?
I don't. May I not respond to that question?
I'm sorry.
I guess you can tell from our sort of stunned response to your presentation. Has risk assessment or anybody else looked at this, both from the potential of any actual hazard that it poses or from the loss of productivity or the what if it fails right now? I mean, other than we all get to go home. But to what degree you looked at this, you had some people seriously consider it, and for whatever reason they passed on offering it as a policy option package.
Yes.
I guess what we're trying to tease out from you is a little more detail on why a critical function like this would have been passed over.
Madam Chair, the group that looked at it was unanimous that this project needs to take place. What they didn't want to do was put option packages into the budget that would then drive the discussion. They wanted those items to be considered separately rather than lumped in as an entire package, I believe was the reasoning with the group.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Representative Bucket.
What's our contingency plan? If that were to happen, do we have agreements with Willamette University or anywhere in town that will house us while the building is being worked on?
Madam Chair, Representative Avakian, we have had ongoing discussions with Willamette University and with DAS about where we could relocate in the event that something happened and we were not able to occupy the Capitol. Yes.
Yes, thank you. Dave, you mentioned this is the old part of the building, though, but the wings would be okay. Is that what I heard you say?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, the wings, the power that comes into the wings comes in on the other side of the building. So the wings could still continue to function. But you would have the issue of do you try to operate with a building that is half closed and half open?
May I? Yeah. During the earthquake, when was that? 95, something like that.
Okay. 90.
The building did function without use of, I believe, either of the chambers.
Correct.
Right. And the meetings took place in the various meeting rooms. Are there meeting rooms in the old, in the new building? Okay. Yeah. Okay, I think that there are need to be some contingency plans if this could happen at any time. I think that there it needs to be fixed.
And Senator Morissette, we have, over the course of the last year, upgraded our emergency response plan, our business continuation plan for short-term emergencies, and we are working on a long-term plan as well. That project we estimate at a cost just over $1 million, and we have cash reserves in our capital operating account that we believe could be used to fund about half of that. So it would be our request that half of the funding come from a general fund option package and half of it from an increase in our expenditure limitation so that we could use the existing money that we do have. That's money that's generated from rent for the tenants in the building. The second package is the continuing technology transition program. As I said earlier, in 1999, we started this program, which was a series of 20 projects that were to be completed over a period of 6 years. We completed the projects of moving the committee agenda scheduling system, the desk functions, the docketing functions for fiscal, council, and revenue. All of those have been moved off of the mainframe onto a client-server system. The one program or the one project that has not been completed is moving the bill drafting system off of the mainframe computer. The problem with the system as it exists right now is that we're using a highly customized software package from IBM that is more than 20 years old that IBM no longer supports. We are fortunate in that one of the very few people in the world who still works on this program is here in town. And we have him on a contract, and he comes in and works with our staff and legislative council to keep that system operating. The problem is he's more than 70 years old, and we don't know how long he's going to be willing to come in and do this work. So we feel that it would be prudent now to undertake this project. It would be done throughout the interim following the 05 session. We would actually, for the 07 session, still work on the existing system, but immediately after the 07 session, we would change over to the new system. The total cost of that project is approximately $2.5 million, and that includes some hardware and software upgrades that are the wrap-up of the entire technology transition program.
Dave, could you elaborate a little more on why this system would not be available for the 07 session?
Senator Morse, the bill drafting for the 07 session will actually start taking place in 06, and it will take a full 24 months to develop the new system. So there's no way we can have the new system developed and implemented prior to the time that bill drafting for the 07 session has to commence. We will be operating under the existing system and developing the new system concurrently.
Are you looking at a customized system? Or it would seem to me that as many legislatures that exist state that there would be some system that you could purchase that wouldn't require a lot of adaptation.
Senator Morse, we've done extensive research on that with other legislatures. And the functions that are performed in our legislative council office are different from some other legislatures, to the point where, in all likelihood, the solution is to purchase an off-the-shelf product and customize it for our use. And I think that Dave Hendricks could comment further on that when he's up to talk.
I was just about to invite him up right now, if you don't mind, Dave. I apologize for having to step out for just a moment. It's my understanding that we're discussing why it is you need a bill drafting system, and maybe you could share with us from a drafter's perspective.
Chair Johnson, members of the committee, I'm Dave Hendricks, acting legislative counsel. Our old program is old. We've gotten good use out of it. Far beyond what we initially thought. At one point, we were looking at replacing it in 1994 as being the first part of this transition program, and the decision was made to make this piece of it the last part of it. So we've got another 10 years' use out of what the original plan was. And the the problem with trying to do there is no off-the-shelf product, nor is there a product out there that other states have developed that it looks like we could just go and acquire and make it work for ours. All of the other states that have gone through this with their bill drafting systems have essentially developed their own product to meet their needs because the systems are so different in each of the different states. So there isn't sort of a product out there that a lot of different states have been buying and using. We have looked at several of these. Back before we had the limit on out-of-state travel, we had people out going to look at some of the conferences that were held on this very problem, because all the states face this. Washington is going through its second transition in the same period of time in which we're looking at going through one. But the product isn't there. And it's the main problem is that it is really, it's easy to think of this as being a word processing system. And it's easy to think, well, you know, everybody knows how word processing systems work, and can't we just go buy, you know, a copy of Microsoft Word and modify it? But it doesn't work that. This is really more of a data processing system that we're looking at. It has to handle huge amounts of data. It has to be able to not only get that text into a form where we can publish it to issue to you so you have your bills and your amendments and other things you need to get through the session, but it also has to be able to transform all that into a form whereby it can be published, since we publish the laws at the end of each session, and so it also has to be a publication program. We've looked long and hard at it, and we'd love to be able to say, gee, there's a simple thing we can go buy, and it looks great, and it'll work, but we haven't found it.
We'll do Representative Ivaki and then Representative Smith.
Everything that you just mentioned has the appearance that it's already happening. So what is it that isn't working from your end that needs to be changed? Meaning the publication, us getting our bills drafted, the public having access to it.
Chair Johnson, Representative Vakian. The problem is that the program we have is no longer supported. We're, as Dave mentioned, we're living by grace of contractees, people who worked on the system when it was originally put into place. And we cannot rely on them forever to maintain this and to keep it running. Our nightmare scenario, of course, would be a collapse. It would be the equivalent of the panel going out, only probably worse, because this building runs on paper and on words. And if we can't generate them, we will not be getting any work done until we figure out how to deal with it. It's something all the states have been dealing with, but they have been doing it basically the way that this proposal reflects, by taking what programs they can that are already on the market and customizing them to meet the needs that we have.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and the problem with that is it's expensive because it involves a lot of consultants and it involves a lot of programming. It's not very much hardware. It's not even a lot for the software when you start looking at it. It's the process of putting it together to make sure it does what we need it to do.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Good morning to both of you. Let me begin by saying both of you do admirable work in the state of Oregon's. Fortunate to have both of you working in this building. I want to compare apples and oranges a little bit on this information systems. Have we done any homework on determining the benefit of going to an online system for the legislature, to where perhaps we'd have laptops on our desks on the floor rather than reprinting bills? I know Nevada does this. I know the state of Utah is going through a major construction renovation right now, and they're really upgrading everything. And I'm just curious why we haven't.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, we have a project that is on our list of items that we want to get to, and we will at some point, which is a wireless project to look into the feasibility of going to a situation where you would have laptops on your desk, where you would be able to travel from one part of the Capitol to another part and still be hooked up to the network. We do have that project on our list, and it is a priority, but it has not risen to the point on that list to where we've been able to address that yet.
Would you mind sending me information on that?
I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
Chair Johnson, Representative Smith, I've been kind of part of those discussions just because of the technology team that looks at these issues. And the big issues on that tend to be relating to if the building, if we're going to go there, it should probably be wireless. But the problem is the old wings of the building create real limitations and real expenses. It will be a very expensive project to do that sort of what we've been calling chamber automation, to be able to bring that sort of technology to the members at their desk, because it's not going to be easy to do wireless in the old wings of the building, from what I've been able to, from what I understand.
Well, it just seems like something worth investigating. I know, like every member in this building, you know, we're receiving thousands of documents that we're never reading. I mean, they go in our folder and we pull them out perhaps once, maybe twice, and, you know, some of them more than that. But, boy, if we could just have a system to where we printed those that we really wanted, and other than that, could just have a system.
Thank you. Well, I was just about to say we're playing it fast and loose with not having viable alternatives for the two things that could shut us down. And to me, that's almost unacceptable. I mean, you know, we're hoping that this guy lives a long and happy life and will always be available to run our system, but if he doesn't, then we may be in real trouble. And then as far as the electrical panel, I just think that that's got to be extremely high on the list of things to do immediately.
Well, I think what I'm going to do in exercising the prerogative of the chair is to ask the professional staff to flag these items and not just let us pass by in this conversation. I think just looking at the reaction of this committee, the panel and the drafting system, I think, have risen to a point where we certainly don't want to be disrespectful of our colleagues' recommendation that these not come in policy option packages, but I think that you're hearing from our reaction that this is important and that we'd like to come back and revisit this, figure out if there are any savings that can be found anyplace else in the budget to accommodate dealing with these two items. And unless there's an objection from the panel, that's what I'm going to ask the professional staff to do. We'll come back and see where we could achieve some savings to see if there's money for these two projects. Senator Morse.
Senator, wouldn't these likely qualify for COP?
I would ask Mr. Nisswander to respond
yes,
to that.
Yes, Chair Johnson, Senator Morse. There is the bill drafting system would definitely qualify for COP financing, and I ran some scenarios of what that would look like over about a 5 to 6 year payoff. So yes, that is an option. It would take about a $1.9 million project. With the debt service on it, would be a little less than $500,000 in this biennium if it were COP financed, and that would be paid off over, I believe, three biennia. So yes.
Okay.
I was going to say, too, Senator Johnson, we do have some materials we have on the very question that Senator Morse asked with respect to is there some way we can do this cheaper, and I'd be happy to provide you with that because that question always comes up with respect to this particular proposal. And I'd be happy to give that to all the committee members.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Is there tie-in with legislative revenue and legislative fiscal on this software, or is there a separation there?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, the system that we are developing would give us a common database that we would all be accessing. Rather than have silos of information, we would have a common database that every office would access. So everything will be integrated. While the bill drafting portion of it would be a legislative council function, you wouldn't have people in fiscal suddenly drafting bills, but the information that is common to the various different interests would be in one large database.
Thank you.
And Dave, to some degree, to that point where the separation of powers makes it impossible, you're making my case about integrating the governor's office, the secretary's office, and the treasurer's office. I mean, it seems to me that we move a lot of common information, and while I'm probably the most unsophisticated person about computers sitting at this desk, there are ways to firewall information for confidentiality. It certainly seems to me to make sense to have the basic hardware purchased in common and then figure out how to screen it through the software applications, rather than to simply say everybody's got to have their own discrete mainframe or whatever platform. That just doesn't make any sense. I'd rather have one room where all the computer stuff was and share that data that's appropriate and screen the rest.
Chair Johnson, the only thing I'd add to that is that to some degree our office's interest is to have the program that works best for what we need it to do, that we can't lose functionality. We're used to what we've got. We'd like to gain some, but we can't lose what we have. And to some degree, the program may drive the type of hardware, for instance.
Okay, that's fair.
But the hardware isn't a big issue. The difference anymore between server, mainframe, et cetera, I'm not sure that those differences are as great as they were back when they put the present system in place, when we had to build a very large dedicated room for a large mainframe. Mainframes have shrunk. Servers are, you know, they're not that far apart as far as the differences between. At least that's my impression, again, from a person who isn't terribly technologically savvy. So.
Good. Well, we'll come back and revisit this item.
Okay.
Thanks, Mr. Members. Go ahead, Dan.
The third project that we discussed with the work group is the recording and archiving project that is on page 10 of the book. This is an important project because the systems that we have in place are old and they are costly to maintain. We, in effect, are running three different systems to capture this information. That is required by rule and statute that we have audio recordings. The tape decks in each of the hearing rooms are old, and that is technology that we're now down to where I think there's only one vendor where we can even get those tape decks. So they are on the verge of needing to be replaced. And rather than piecemeal replacements there and with our other systems, which are the web audio system and the video recordings, it's time for us to undertake that project. We recognize that funding is somewhat limited this time. It is one of our top priorities and will be there until we actually get the system replaced. But of the three projects that I've discussed, this is clearly the least important of the three.
Senator Smith.
Thank you. On a project cost of $496,000, I would have to think if, and I'm not technologically sophisticated, but, you know, over a short period of time, that project's going to save itself or pay for itself, excuse me. And so, well, you know, granted dollars are limited in this building, I would just have to imagine that this is an investment where upgrading would pay for itself.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, as an example, we have upgraded our ability to produce DVDs rather than videotapes of floor sessions and meetings. And those can be produced at a higher speed than the VHS recordings, which can only be done in real time. So we're doing more dubbing of committee meetings and floor sessions now than we have in the past with the same number or even fewer staff people. So yes, there are advances we'll make financially by doing that project.
Okay.
Moving on to our organization chart on page 12, you can see how our agency is structured. And item 5, performance measures. We did, in the process of developing our strategic plan, establish 115 different goals within the various offices of legislative administration, and there were a total of 288 action items toward achieving those goals. There are several bullets there that talk about some of the goals that have been achieved over the past several years. And in the budgeting process, we have worked with the fiscal staff to develop performance measures. We've got 12 of those that are in Appendix A of this presentation that we would present to your committee for consideration.
Let's go right to those. I'm mindful of the time.
Okay. The first performance measure that we've established would be to provide efficient, effective, accountable, and customer-oriented service to all legislators as it relates to timeliness, accuracy, helpfulness, expertise and information that's available to legislators and the members of the public. It would be our intention to measure this with a post-session survey of legislators, legislative staff. We may even want to survey lobbyists or members of the public to determine how we were, how successful were we at meeting your needs. Within our information systems office, we have a goal of resolving IT problems quickly and to the user's satisfaction. Right now, when our PC techs visit your office and work on your computer, they're supposed to bring along a comment card every time so that you or your staff can respond to each visit and give us feedback as to whether or not we are meeting your needs.
Just throwing rose petals down in front of Bud isn't good enough?
Exactly.
That certainly helps, Madam Chair.
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When did this practice, when was it supposed to start?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris said, I think we've been doing that perhaps not on a regular basis, but certainly irregularly for several years.
3 years.
Really?
Comment cards?
My information systems manager is informing that we have not been doing that during this session.
Representative Smith.
I don't have a comment card, but can you, I just want to pass on to you, I owe Bud a dozen donuts. Take that for what that's worth in measuring.
Senator Morse.
Yeah, and I just want to say how absolutely pleased I am with the service that you provide, and I would love to be able to fill out a card, but I haven't had that opportunity, so I would hope I could. And again, Bud, I don't want to single Bud out, but everyone who has come to my office has provided very timely, effective service.
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, thank you very much. We appreciate hearing that. And you will have an opportunity in our post-session survey to comment on all of the support that you've gotten, including the information system support. The next item would be to streamline and improve the legislative processes by increasing automation and improving IT systems. That obviously would include the bill drafting system that we've been talking about, and we will measure that through the number of projects that are completed on time and within budget. We want to expand and strengthen legislative information available to citizens via internet and email. And again, that would be done as we would measure that as a percentage of people using our website as to their satisfaction level of using the site. We would like to increase public access to the legislative process by expanded television coverage. We have been in discussions with several organizations around the state in trying to get our signal to a greater number of households. Right now, through the Oregon Wind system and Oregon Public Broadcasting and some of the cable operators, we send a signal out to about 400,000 households, mainly in the Willamette Valley, from Portland stretching south to Eugene. We're a little bit into southern Oregon, but we miss a large portion of the state, and our goal would be to get to a greater number of Oregonians so that wherever you are, you have an opportunity to access coverage of the legislature.
Senator Morse.
Yeah, thank you. I feel frustrated at times trying to find things on the state site and so on, but I guess what I'm getting at mostly, though, is do you have an opportunity for people to comment that's readily available where you have anyone who accesses the site has a button they can press or an arrow they can click on to make a comment?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, we do, and we get comments from people in the public.
I can't find that.
Really?
Well,
perhaps, Mr. Henderson, you would get with Senator Morissette and do a tutorial.
Well, we will do that.
I think I don't need it for myself, but if I can't find it, I'm not sure that there is an opportunity for people to readily comment on ease of access, is what I'm saying.
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, our plan also, and we can add this to our list of goals, is to redesign our website during the next interim And we're making notes of various issues such as this that we think need to be addressed, and we'll make sure that we address that so it's very clear where you can go and ask questions or make comments.
Actually, legislators may be uniquely qualified to help you with that information, given that we hear from our constituents regularly when your systems don't provide ease of access.
Right, and Madam Chair, that would... When we do this redesign, we involve all the offices, and we will definitely have people from the caucus offices at the table working with us so that they are sharing concerns that they're hearing from their members as far as ease of access.
Please continue.
Switching to page 2 of Appendix A, our goal is for
really
our...
Really quick.
Representative Smith.
Before we switch over, I want to make sure I once again compliment your staff. Anne-Marie is absolutely fabulous. My wife's not happy that she brings brownies, but it's perhaps the only time I get brownies, so I appreciate that. And I have to tell you, the people, I don't know how you do it, but the people who have probably the most difficult job in this building, and that's cleaning up after us, they do it with a smile. They're courteous, they're polite, and I got to tell you, you're doing something right because your staff is excellent.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, thank you very much. We appreciate that, and we work very hard at recruiting and hiring only the best people, and we feel that we're very successful.
You're doing something right.
Yeah. Let's move through the rest of the performance measures, and then we're going to look at the priority list, and then we're going to take public testimony.
Okay. Our goal with workforce diversity is that our workforce reflect the population of the state. Recognizing that it is difficult to recruit in many of the minority populations, but we have established a diversity advocate within our office and are constantly looking at ways to improve our recruitment, particularly among minority communities. The next item would be a stable workforce and well-trained, experienced, and knowledgeable state employees. Our goal is to keep our voluntary turnover rate low. One of the ways we do that is through professional development. We encourage our employees to take advantage of classes, seminars, meetings that improve their knowledge and expertise in whatever field they work in. Our goal would be to reduce our workers' compensation claims to fewer than 10 per biennium.
The fact that you have this as a performance measure at least transmits to me that that you have a number of workers' comp claims. Is there a pattern, or is my assumption incorrect?
Madam Chair, there is a pattern, and we recognize the pattern, and we're dealing specifically with it. The issue that we're dealing with right now more than anything else are repetitive motion issues with people using a mouse or a keyboard to do computer work. That's probably the most prominent pattern that we've seen right now, and we are working to get people the correct ergonomic equipment so that we minimize the exposure to those kinds of injuries. Minimizing cost of workers' compensation claims, obviously, would tie right in with that. And then in financial services, providing fiscal accountability, compliance, and sound financial management, which we have been fortunate in receiving the Gold Star certificate for several years, and that's due to the thoroughness and accuracy of our financial services staff.
Okay.
That concludes our performance measures. Where would you like to go from here?
Well, I think you have your priority list, and because we have not seen this budget previously, in phase one we went through and prioritized all of the lists, and I don't know whether or not, given the constraints of time, we want to go through that exercise. I would leave that up to the panel, or to just ask for your review of these lists and see if generally we are in accord with Mr. Henderson's prioritizations, and I see people saying that would be fine. So I think what we're going to do now is to take a little break before we go into the assembly, which you're also presenting, and ask the public for the public testimony. I do not want to run out of time.
Very quick question.
Yes, sir.
on number of cable systems or cable public access channels around the state, is that a fiscal issue or a coordination issue?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, it's both.
Okay.
It's the issue of... getting the signal to them, and sometimes that's a financial matter of installing the right kind of transceivers and receivers to get the signal to them, which is obviously a cost function.
And just really quick on that, Madam Chair. So if folks in Eastern Oregon wanted to pursue this, they would just contact you, though. And if they wanted to bear the cost, could they work out some type of agreement to where...
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, if there's an operator out there that wants to bear the cost and we can technologically make it happen, we would work with them to do that.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for Mr. Henderson with this portion of his presentation? All right. I would ask Larry if he would to get the testimony. Mr. Hazelwood, given that I saw you sign up, I'm going to invite you up while they get the rest of the list. You may be the witness.
Madam Chair, my name is Lee Hazel, a longtime senior advocate, and Dave's already lost his bet today. He said no one would be here to testify, so. And I do have to say a potential conflict of interest. I've known Dave a long time, and I kid him almost every morning, and thank him for coming in. But I don't have access to the books that you have, but I've, as you well know, over 20 years being around here, I do try to study some of this stuff. And to me, seeing the governor's, by the way, my name is Lee Hazelwood. I live in Staten, Oregon. I better get that on the record. And I should normally say the great state of Staten, Oregon. Seeing some of the cuts that the governor's proposed, and I understand why that's done. But to me, in the years that I've been here, legislative revenue is very crucial to the average citizen to come in and ask. And normally I'm the leader on this, is asking dumb questions, and they give me great answers. And so I seem to know some of the things that are going on. So, and the policy package that Dave has, my suggestion would be that we do that electrical stuff first, because Representative Bakken mentioned about moving to Willamette University, and I can't see a lot of us walking across to Willamette for hearings because it occasionally rains in Oregon, and so we might be trapped in a flood going over there. But I do want to remark, somebody else mentioned the fact that In my lifetime, I've been in the capitals a number of times in Ohio and Michigan. It's always to me an honor to come into this building and see how clean and neat it is. I've heard more remarks about people that I don't even know saying, what a great place this is. How do they do it? And I would recommend that Dave come to my house and practice in the evening, because mine needs a lot of shining. There's paperwork all over the house. But to me, legislative revenue needs additional funding. They do a superb job. So I'd like to go on the record as saying, and the whole capital area is something to be proud of. And I guess my other question is, please find the money, but don't take it away from Oregon Project Independence.
We would have been disappointed had you not worked that in somehow, Lee. So thank you for not letting us down.
But I'm open to any questions. Well, I do have one other comment. Somebody alluded to somebody being 70 and hope they live a long life. When you get to be 80, you know, you're looking forward to being 81.
Thank you for your testimony, you. And I think you will find in this panel a very receptive audience to your good comments about all of the professional staff in this building. I think that it's very easy to take them for granted, the amount of work that they do, both for the public and for the legislature. And I, at least speaking from the chairman's point of view, I think you're going to find a very receptive audience to try to make sure that they have the tools they need to do what they do.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you for coming. Last call for anybody else who would like to testify today. All right. Mr. Henderson, you're back up again, visiting now with about the Legislative Assembly.
Madam Chair, if you will go to Legislative Assembly Presentation tab in your book. This will be very short and very much to the point. The Assembly consists of the 90 legislators and the 6 leadership offices. That's the President of the Senate, Speaker of the House, and the 4 caucus offices. And in addition to that, the desks, the Secretary of the Senate and the Chief Clerk of the House. The budget is divided into an appropriation for the interim period and then for the session, which would be the 2000 session. This budget is strictly an essential budget level budget with no increases nor decreases. And I'd be happy to respond to any questions. The list under the tab, which is Appendix B, is a list of potential reductions. I would emphasize that these are not presented in any priority order. We have worked with the all of the offices, the leadership offices, and the desks to identify where savings could be found within the Assembly budget and put these down. I know some of them will be very distasteful, but these are what we've been able to identify as places where savings could be found within the Assembly budget.
I think we call the panel's attention to that list, and let's give it some additional thoughtful review, because I think, Dave, what some of us are struggling with is we've got electrical boxes that are teetering on the brink of catastrophic failure, and to try to figure out, are there some savings within the caucus offices, and I don't say this in a partisan way, we've got 4 offices to look at, plus the leadership offices, and to see whether or not there are any savings there. And so to what degree did you collaborate with the caucus offices in developing this list? Is this an ambush, or were they party to it?
No, Madam Chair, they were party to it. In the process of developing the 10% reduction list that all agencies were asked to compile, we worked with each of the caucus offices, and they had an opportunity to either say we would do an across-the-board cut or we would specifically cut this position or this line item in our budget. So they had an opportunity for input. One point I would make so that as a base level of understanding, the President's office budget and the Speaker's office budget are identical, and the 4 caucus office budgets are identical, so that there is no unequal treatment among those various offices.
And then just to make sure that we all understand how this works, each one of the caucus office gets a lump sum of money, and how they divide that, whether it's on salaries or structural reconfiguration, or that's totally decided within their offices.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
To what degree are the salary structures of those offices in the public domain?
Madam Chair, the budget, the salaries that go into the budget are developed the same way as all salaries for all public positions. But as you said, they can divide that and spend that in whatever way they want. They have a specific number of positions that are budgeted for, and they get a lump sum for each of those. Now, they can hire twice as many people, half as many people, whatever they want. But those salaries are comparable to salaries that the similar positions in state government would receive.
So let me just make sure that I understand this. Clerical position level 2 in one of the caucus offices would be identical to a clerical position level 2 at ODF&W.
Madam Chair, I can't say identical, but I can say they would have similar duties and responsibilities and functions.
And that's standard across all the caucus offices?
Yes.
Could you get us a list of the offices broken down by salary?
Yes.
If you would mind giving it to the professional staff, and that way the whole panel can get it.
We'll do that.
And so in going through and looking at these, where you have, I'm just picking the first one, Interim Senate President's Office, $78,000 potential reduction. This was developed along with the President's Office.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Smith.
Thank you. What type of analysis was done to determine staffing needs
for legislators.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I cannot say that any systematic study has been done. It has developed as it is over the years, where you can go back and look at the budgets from previous years and see where they've gone from no staff to one staff to two staff during sessions. And there was no staff allocation for the interim at one point, and then there was a start at a low amount, which has gradually been increased to where it's now somewhere in the vicinity of $1,800 a month for the interim salary. So there's been no research or any systematic look at that has not been done, to my knowledge.
Colleagues, I come from a part of the state where the salary expectations perhaps are lower than other parts of the state, but I have to tell you, it's pretty tough to take care of your staff on the budgets that we're allowed to have for our staff. And I'm sure this discussion comes up every biennium. But you know, if you're Kirk Schrader as a co-chair, and you're operating on the budget that he has to operate on with his staff, I don't know how he does it without using, you know, campaign dollars or some other method of paying his staff. And the same thing goes if you're chair of judiciary, if you're chair of some of those other committees that are very, very demanding. And so, just an observation.
I have nothing else. I'm happy to respond to questions. The difficulty that you have in making reductions in the assembly is that just about the only thing you have are personnel. I mean, I don't know the exact percentage, but it's got to be in the 80-90% range of what that assembly budget is. So to make reductions, it's going to affect people.
Senator Morris, what do you think about if the three of us do a 10% reduction in legislators, and we'll figure out which ones make the list?
Since I'm outvoted at the moment, I'd rather wait till Senator Johnson gets back in the room.
Oh, you were good. I figured the three of us could reach consensus on this one.
Well, I think the public has unrealistic expectations, responsibilities, and time demands for legislators and staff. You know, the perception I think the public is that this is a part-time job. It is not a part-time job. At least I found it to be that. And it does make it difficult. Not for me personally, but you know, I just am amazed at the sacrifices that so many members make to serve in this body. With their careers and professionally and the financial impact that it has. And so I personally would not be in favor of reducing compensation to legislators. One thing I would point out, and I don't know whether you factored it in this 10% reduction, is that at least on our side of the assembly, we did both the president's office and the majority and minority offices did not spend all the allocated funds. And whether that's been factored in to the budget, that's something that we should probably take a look at.
Actually, by operation of law, the any funds that were unspent at the end of the interim were no longer available for the assembly to use under current law, so they would revert to the ending balance. So those savings would in fact be what they'd be used for next biennium. There is a proposal that the leadership offices are considering to change that law. Basically, at this time, the way the assembly's budget works is that at the end of session, if there is unspent money appropriated to the assembly, it can be, that the leadership offices agree, carried over into the interim for assisting with interim expenses. And the proposal would be that it be modified, basically, that the only funds that are carried over in the interim would be funds necessary to cover session-related expenses. So if session goes beyond July 1 into the next biennium, you could carry money over to the interim to pay those expenses for session. But in exchange for that, make it so that funds at the end of the interim wouldn't revert when session starts. But in effect, if you have savings from how you conduct your business during the interim, that you could, in fact, use those savings during session to help you with session-related expenses when, in fact, your expenses probably and your demand for services and staffing support are higher. So that's a proposal that leadership offices are discussing for putting in the budget bill.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Dave, I need a little historical background. Have we ever allowed committee chairs to have additional staff in addition to their regular staff?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, each committee chair gets a committee administrator and a committee assistant. Depending on the workload of the committee, that administrator and or that assistant may be shared with another committee. And there have been instances where committees had a particularly heavy workload where they actually had more than one full-time administrator working. But that would be a position, in support of the committee as opposed to strictly the chair.
The one thing I'd point out to each of your colleagues is you know, you take Senator Decker, who, because of his position on the Senate side, carries a very heavy load in this building and receives correspondence from all over the state. I think one of the things we ought to consider is there an allocation we ought to be giving to the Kurt Schraders and the Tom Butlers and those folks who are taking on a disproportionate amount of correspondence from the state and figure out how to assist them.
This would be by virtue of the committee assignments. So that irrespective of the people, it would be co-chairs would have additional staff.
Exactly.
Chair of revenue would have additional staff.
How does Schrader do it? I mean, you look at that. Granted, LFO is right there for him, but LFO's, I assume, isn't answering his weekly or daily correspondence from folks all over the state. And, you know, he has two choices, either ignore it or do the best he can to trip through with his nominal staff. And I'm sure they're very capable, but nonetheless, trip through it and try and respond. And somehow I've always seen that as an issue that this building needs to deal with.
Senator Morset.
Well, as long as you're on that subject, I think that when you consider that we have twice as many representatives, we represent twice as many people as the House side, yet we have the same mail budget and so on.
Do you really?
So, oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
If we have to...
I was shocked when I went over the Senate.
I didn't
expected
know that.
The stamp and the bones.
Well,
really?
Yeah. We have. When same we send out a mailing, it's twice as large as the mailing that you send out as a representative. And it's always a shock to come over from the House side and realize that you get the same amount of expenses for twice as many people. That's okay.
After my review of this list, on behalf of the House and the Senate, I will reject as chair two of them just out of hand. You take the phones out of those chambers and somebody will hurt somebody. It does, however, clearly, I think, beg the question of making calls on those phones, whether or not there would be some access code you could put in. I use an 800 number when I use those, or a calling card when I use those phones. You could easily call Madagascar from the phones in the back of the chambers, and you might want to look at some upgrade, but you try to take those phones out, they'll come for you.
Scratch that one from the list.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
That concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any other questions.
All right. Thank you very much. I think then, any additional questions for Mr. Henderson? I think then we'll move into Legislative Council.
Before Dave starts, if you have this notebook, this is the presentation materials that he will be walking through with the delivered to your office, hopefully.
That's not this one.
That's his budget notebook. And he may make reference to that, but this is the one that would have his presentation materials in.
Larry, one of the things I'm a little vague about, and I apologize for rushing Mr. Henderson so fast. I was worried that we were going to run out of time and we may end up doing just fine. But with respect to those proposed cuts that involve such a dicey number of players that all would have input into it, I mean, there are 90 people that are going to have an opinion about those recommended cuts, particularly as they affect the legislative staffs. Certainly the leadership offices and the caucus offices have a dog in the fight. I don't know necessarily what the best venue is to vet those cuts. This panel could make recommendations. I don't know to what degree your consultation is dispositive, that everybody has signed on to these potential cuts and said okie dokie if the panel and makes that recommendation and we forward it through the process, whether that's acceptable. I'm trying to feel out how, if we looked at our priorities, and we realize we need about $2.5 million to do the drafting system and the electrical. Absent any other fixes, you just presented us a list with about $2 million worth of potential reductions on it. Whether or not, and maybe this question is to Larry as well, we should consider that cut list in a hunt to try to find additional revenue, or whether or not to pay for the electrical and the drafting, or whether or not your inquiry into other parts of the budget you think would be satisfactory to yield the kind of revenue that we would need to support the drafting system and the electrical. I mean, if you just wholesale said, great, leadership and all the caucus offices offered up these cuts, we'll take them all, and we're trading those for a new drafting system and the electrical upgrades. Except the telephones.
Yeah. Chair and committee members, definitely the assembly offices, leadership offices, were asked to participate in development of prioritization of services lists and reductions lists, just like all other agencies. And those lists have been before both co-chairs since probably the second month of session. So it's part of their deliberations for the co-chair's budget, as well as their discussions with the leadership offices as to how the Assembly's budget would be modified. Both co-chairs are aware of the financial concerns that you have, both for the electrical gearbox and for the bill drafting system, and have tasked LFO to look for ways to make that happen. And we are going over the reductions lists with co-chairs and the leadership offices for development of a plan to make that happen. I think before we get to work session stage three, there'll be more information that I can share as to how to do that and proposals that I can provide to the committee.
Okay. That certainly that answers my question as far as how we're going to proceed. Okay. Mr. Hendricks, good morning. If you would begin your presentation and state your name for the record, please.
Chair Johnson, members of the committee, good morning. I am Dave Hendricks, acting legislative counsel. Thank you for the opportunity to come here this morning and talk to you about the budget for the coming biennium. The legislative counsel's office is the oldest of the legislative service agencies. It was created in 1953 at the same time that the legislature went through the last effort to recodify the laws that produced what is now the Oregon Revised Statutes, the green softbound volumes you've come to know and love. And part of the reason the agency was created was to try to avoid the need to do the repeated recodification that had gone on since the state had come into existence, where laws were passed by the legislature, but there was not a very good place to go to see where all those laws were codified and put together and intertwined to show where exactly the law was at this time. And the concept was that this office, legislative counsel's office, would provide a mechanism to keep it straight, to keep a continual revision project in the works, and to establish rules for drafting and for codification that would provide the best and clearest statement of the law to the public and to business and to other people and to the courts who use the statutes of this state. And that's basically what the office has been doing since 1953, and has been developing a very extensive and fairly complicated list of rules, procedures, personnel, who are able to provide to you those services that you need in order to be able to make sure that when you pass out a law, that it's going to be as clear and as accurate as possible, and to the best conceivable manner allow both the courts and regulated industries to basically, and people, and the people who are affected by these laws, to know what it is you did, to know what it is you did. When I came to this office, and this was back in 1988, I came from private practice, and I was always amazed about the incredibly significant role played by this office. When I looked at it coming in from private practice, and you begin to realize the role that the attorneys in the office and all the support staff in this office plays in trying to make sure that the things that the legislature did were understood by the courts, one branch of government, and by the executive branch, another branch of government, and that how important it was and how much responsibility it imposed on the people who were doing this job. And I found that out to some degree in my very first session. I mean, I came in at the very end of 88, and I started in 89, and they gave me PERS. And I drafted a bunch of PERS bills, and someone came to me during session, probably from the agency, and said, you know, I think you've created a real problem for the tax qualification for PERS. And I said, well, you know, what happens if you lose the tax qualification? And they said, well, billions. Billions. You know, I'm a first-time drafter coming in, and they're giving me stuff, and I'm going, I'm drafting stuff that have consequences of perhaps billions. And this is not unusual. It isn't just PERS. I mean, it's in almost every subject area we cover. So I think everybody in the office feels a huge responsibility. Nobody wants to draft a bill that even has millions. I mean, millions is bad enough. But we also deal with hundreds of billions and billions. So I guess just to start out, I'd say I've been really impressed all the time I've been in this office about the amount of devotion from people who have come and stayed entire careers to do the work of the people. And I think it's in part not just because of the responsibility, because it is very gratifying to be able to work on very important things, and we work on very important things every day. That's just my opening spiel. I'll move on to the budget.
Actually, though, you've touched on something very important that I don't think we should pass by lightly, and that is whether it's in your shop or it's in legislative revenue or legislative fiscal, the fact that we have professionals who strive so hard to be nonpartisan. I would find it very difficult to walk into your office and try to identify the partisan leanings of any of your lawyers. And I think that that is an attitude that pervades these three big professional offices, legislative counsel, legislative revenue, and legislative fiscal. And whatever we can do as a body to encourage those offices to stay nonpartisan and non-political. Otherwise, we'll never attract and retain the best and the brightest who are willing, and you said the words, to make careers here. If we make these professionals feel vulnerable in any way to the political vicissitudes of this building, I think we will have a profound recruitment problem and retention problem before us. And I believe that it is the obligation of the people in this building, particularly leadership, to strive diligently to make sure that this building is a place where people feel confident that they can build a career and that they're not going to be subject to the changing winds of politics that sweep through here. I just didn't want to let that go without saying it. I think it's terribly important that we're able to retain and recruit the caliber of people that work here.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. I mean, I will tell you that in recruiting people, I know that every single person who comes into the office, you know, the highest and most important thing is, are you going to be able to do a professional job and keep your opinions out of the advice you're giving to the members? It is just crucial for our office to maintain that nonpartisan aspect. It's crucial to the way we work. I think it is a great service to the body to have a nonpartisan office in this position. You need unbiased legal advice that's the same to everybody, the same to everybody. When they come in, everybody gets the same opinion. Nobody gets one based on, well, we know what you'd like to hear. Because once you go there, you're in a lot of hurt, because it may be what you want to hear, but it may not be what you get when you get to the courts or when you get out there to the real world when these things go on out. So I think it's wonderful that Oregon saw fit to set it up in this fashion. I think it's been a great service to the body over the years. It doesn't work that way everywhere else, and I think it works really well here.
Mr. Hendricks, you're acting as interim right now, or acting, I guess is the more proper terminology. How will your recruitment be structured? Because I think that the head lawyer for the legislature is such an incredibly important position. How do you anticipate recruiting for your position?
Chair Johnson, I'm, of course, hired by the Legislative Council Committee, statutorily created committee that at present has 12 members, appointed from the House and Senate, chaired by the Speaker and the President. I assume that immediately after session, right now the primary goal is get through session. Hopefully sooner rather than later, to get through session, but at that point to go to leadership as in their capacity as chairs of the committee and ask them how they would like me to go ahead and structure the process for the eventual final selection. And based on our experience in the past, I presume that will be a nationwide search in which there will be the usual steps taken to get the news out with respect to the opening.
Good. Thank you.
The Legislative Council's office, we've broken our program down into three programs. The first one is the one you're going to know most about, and that's the general program. And you know about it because it's the one that where you deal with us one-on-one, the drafting services that we provide. It's probably the most important function, but I want to be sure I get a chance to later talk about our publication function as well. But the drafting function is the one where you basically come into our offices, and you probably know that better than anybody else in the state simply because of your interaction with us. We draft for only three categories of people. We draft for the members, and that makes up probably between over a half, probably as much as two-thirds of the number of requests we get. We draft for the committees who send in a certain number, and to a degree that depends on how active the interim committees are at any given time as far as how many of those we get. And we draft for state agencies. We're directed by statute to draft all the bills for the state agencies, which is a good thing because obviously if you want to maintain control of the quality of the drafts that you receive, you want to have the same people drafting them as they come through the process. The agency drafting is set up to ensure that we try to get to those before we have the rush coming in from the members and from the interim committees. They are required to get their draft requests into us by June 1st of the even year. So starting in June, we're drafting this last time about 670 agency requests. We bill state agencies for our drafting services and for the copy editing services. We initiated that two sessions ago, primarily to try to damper down those requests that weren't serious, because sometimes we would get requests from agencies where a fair amount of work was spent only to have the agency decide not to introduce the draft after all. The thought was is that if you're going to get charged with for these things, that would help keep down the number of make them think hard about what they really seriously wanted to do before they came and asked for the drafting services. And I think that's had that effect just based on my personal experience with the agencies, that's been fairly successful. The other thing we do within the general program is to review administrative rules. During the session, during the interim, not during session, we have no time to do it during that period, our attorneys read every rule that's published, that's put out, promulgated by state agencies. We read them for a couple of different reasons. One, we're required by statute to do so. And we basically are looking to see two things, whether or not they are within the scope and intent of the enabling legislation, which is a fairly narrow legal issue when you look at it. It's whether or not a court would throw it out. And the other thing is whether or not they raise constitutional issues. finally,
Dave, let me stop you. Are not the agencies required to have some review for legal sufficiency during the rule promulgation at the agency level?
Chair Johnson, I do not believe that's consistently true in the agencies. Certainly many agencies will talk with their assistant AG, assistant attorney general, in the process of preparing a rule, but not. I'm sure it's not always the case.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Abaki.
What's your role after doing that analysis? Do you have any authority to have the agency do anything?
Chair Johnson, Representative Vakin, if we find a rule with a problem, we don't find a lot. We did at the very beginning when we started doing this back in the 70s, and over time agencies learned, I think, and we tend not to find as many problems. When we find a problem, we write a report to our committee. When we have a legislative council committee, one of the things we always need to do is to try to catch up on those reports that have been written since the last meeting. The committee considers our report. They can agree with us or disagree with us. The agency may come into the committee meeting. The assistant attorney general may come to the committee meeting to make an argument. Usually they tend to agree. Sometimes they don't. But assuming that the committee adopts the report, the committee's only power, and this is a constitutional issue because of separation of powers, their only real power is to introduce a bill or to refer the matter to the appropriate substantive committee so that that committee could consider whether or not there should be some change in the underlying law to clarify what it is the agency should be doing. As I say, we don't find many problems, and even when we do, I would say the great majority of the times the agencies agree with us and go back and fix the rule. The other thing that we do within the general program is provide legal opinions, research requests, et cetera. We do more of that than probably shows up if you just looked at the number of things that are listed on our docket as being research and opinions. As we go through and do these drafts, as you know, we are frequently, each one of those we send out, we're giving a legal opinion, basically, that this is works and this is the way you do it. And frequently we have lengthy discussions, as you know, about individual drafts, about should we do it this way, could it be done that way, are there problems constitutionally, are there problems with federal law. This is all part of the process. The drafting, I always see the opinion piece of it as very closely intertwined with the drafting process because many opinions are directed towards should there be some legislation prepared to address this particular problem that I've got a question about. The other thing we do, we provide support services for the committee, Legislative Council Committee, and also for the Oregon Law Commission. Statutorily created commission that is within our budget, established back in 1997, if I'm not mistaken. They are the law improvement branch, and we provide some drafting services for them because we're directed by statute to do that. Okay, the second program.
Mr. Hendricks, before you move on to the second program, ever since I came into this process, it has been a wonderment to me about how many bills your lawyers handle and the complexity of the drafting, and you've already touched on that. Are there ways that, in your professional opinion, the legislature could make it easier for your shop to function? And I'm not just talking about the volume of the bills, but I'm talking particularly about could there be improved mechanisms to allow, and I know you adhere to strict confidentiality, but whether or not there are mechanisms that could allow legislators working on the same concepts to more easily find each other and see whether or not there are opportunities for collaboration. And I don't know whether Certified Smart Guys someplace have already talked about that and rejected it, or whether you could make any comment about efficiencies that could be discovered in that aspect of your relationship with the 90 legislators.
Chair Johnson, we have for a long time had mechanisms in place to try to get communication back and forth between people who have asked for virtually identical drafts to prevent identical introductions. And I think those work pretty well, except at the very end when it gets get closer to those deadlines, and it's the amount of phone time involved in getting the OKs back and forth to go ahead and release the name of one member to another member, because we aren't going to do that unless we've been told, yes, we can. And that takes sometimes more time than just producing the draft, and sometimes sending a letter along, you know, if we have authority to mention the name of another person, saying you might contact that person. But those only really get you to the identical drafts, which are not the labor problem for us. Doing identical drafts take some time, but they're not anywhere near the amount of difficulty with doing one more new draft, because you're starting from scratch on that. And plus, as we found out during this session, there are often, very often, what we find out is that there are political reasons for doing dual introductions, as you know, that even though one person has the bill, somebody else wants their own, especially with the chamber, sometimes they want them on one side as well as the other. So we try to get the identical drafts. As far as just getting people together, that's going to be harder. People are interested in the same thing. That's going to be harder to do, because it's going to be some judgment about whether or not we should be putting this person. That's pretty difficult. I think the biggest problem for us, frankly, is the timing with the way the drafts come in. And that is the thing that I think is going to need some discussion during the interim. What happened to us this time was, once again, we got the great bulk of them coming in after session started, but we were looking pretty good right up until the last 2 days before the House deadlines, when we got the 550 requests in 2 days. And that just killed us, and that's what resulted in the need to extend the time on the House deadlines. It was literally, I think, almost humanly impossible to do that many drafts in that amount of time. And now, and we're not talking about quality here either. But one of the very frustrating things about the position about for the drafters is that we do focus so heavily on quality, trying to get as perfect a product as possible. And then to be put in a position where you've been there for 10 hours, you're doing your eighth draft, and you just got to ask yourself, am I really doing as good a job as I need to be doing on this draft? It's a really frustrating thing for folks. And I think that's the thing we have to look at probably the hardest, is a way to, because some of those bills that came in, 550 bills, were very significant bills. They are bills that are going through the process right now. You can't just say, well, those 550 weren't important. They were important. And so that's the thing that I think most needs to be addressed in the way the system currently works.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Once again, you folks do a terrific job. It was building on what you were saying in the final days of that deadline on the House side. Leadership on both sides of the aisle all of a sudden decided campaign finance reform was important and literally dropped that in there and said we have to have it, and they're magnificent in juggling the balls to make things happen. During the interim, how do you folks do continuing education if you can't travel outside the state?
Chair Johnson, Representative Smith, there's lots of educational opportunities within the state, of course. Most of the ones that we use are offered through the Oregon State Bar, and there's some private providers as well. So there are lots of opportunities within the state to do that.
Okay.
I think probably where the out-of-state things become more crucial are on the things where, for instance, with the drafting program, in-state doesn't really do it. We can handle what we can by phone, but when you want to go to talk to other states about what they've done on that sort of thing, you know, that's where out-of-state travel becomes more, those sort of things are where it becomes more significant.
But on your continuing ed, you're able to meet the needs of yourself and your staff here in Oregon.
Chair Johnson, Representative Smith, yes, although I will say we've cut back the money for that sort of stuff substantially over the years as far as what we can help the drafters with. When you look at our budget over the years, what's happened with it has been, I know just from being in the office that a lot of those things that used to be under services and supplies have been cut down substantially. The library is pretty much down to the bare minimum.
the
What's that mean?
It means that we got rid of a lot of the hardbound stuff that we used to have, and we rely more and more on an online research machine, which works pretty good. It does replace a lot of it, but I still miss some of the things we used to have back because they're expensive to maintain a law library. The other thing is training. We've cut back on that. We're at this point, we're like legislative administration, like Dave Henderson was saying. We're about 89% of our general fund monies is people. It's just personnel costs. It's only about 11% services and supplies.
Just want one follow-up, please. You're kind of a cornerstone in this entire state, considering the fact in terms of a pipeline, it really starts with you. I want to make sure that when I leave session here, I feel good about the fact that we're putting the resources necessary into the people who represent us in our needs, and knowing that they are getting the continuing education they need, that they have the professional resources they need. I can tell you, I personally would not go to an attorney who I knew wasn't getting the continuing ed that he needed or she needed. I wouldn't go to a doctor who hadn't, been to the newest and latest class on whatever treatment. And so I think the same thing applies to you folks.
Chair Johnson, Representative Smith, thank you. I think that is really important. What happens is with the older drafters is, at least my experience was, is that I very seldom have trouble meeting my CLE requirements because you tend to get drug into things to either present or do some of those other things. And a lot of that has happened, including opportunities to write articles, et cetera, in the past for law review articles, et cetera, that also get you your CLE credits. So that's helped. But if some still, especially for the newer ones, yes, it would be very good.
We had sat in the same room yesterday and discussed the Employment Relation Board's law library needs, and now talking about your law library needs. I don't know. Creating and maintaining a law library is very expensive, and I'm just trying to figure out how you rationalize having the tools in physical proximity to the people who need the tools. I mean, we've got Willamette right across the street, but it certainly doesn't make any sense for you guys to be trundling off to the Willamette Law Library. And just trying to get an understanding of what your needs are. I think the impression of this panel was that the Employment Relations Board had let itself get to a point where it was dangerous in terms of the lack of tools that they have. I guess the panel's looking for some level of reassurance that Legislative Council is nowhere near that point.
Chair Johnson, no, we are not. I think we do have the tools. There may be not quite as wide at the fingertips as they used to be. We also have the Supreme Court Library close, just across the quadrant here. We do have those tools. But my point is that over the years, in order to provide the people, we've tried to look at these things as how we could economize on them in order to make sure that we had the people we need. And it's the people that's the primary issue, I think, at this point, and getting them what they need rather than looking at this. I think we can maintain with where we're at on that services and supplies issue. It's the people thing I want to focus on.
And I think that's something for the panel to be mindful of. You're essentially the managing partner of a law office, and it's easy to lose track of that when you see your sort of modest quarters down there at the other end of the building, and to just make sure that we are respectful and appropriately mindful of the tools that you need to act as a managing partner of a law office.
And it's something I'm hoping, as we go along, even during this session and afterwards, that some of these things could be discussed about the needs. And obviously, coming in from where I came in on such short notice, it was hard. The budget was pretty well developed, and I think it would be helpful to go back and look hard at how we spend our money, what we spend it on, and to see what needs could be. You're going to have additional needs from us. I know that. Laws don't get simpler. They get harder. Federal law gets much more intertwined into Oregon law. Every single two-year session, there are more issues with federal law stepping down in places where federal law has never gone before. And that means that we have to have attorneys who not just are very, very sharp on Oregon law, they need to know a whole bunch of federal law as well. And it's the demands get higher and higher, and frankly, the risks get higher and higher. You know, you don't want to make a mistake. And so, anyway.
I'm going to use this point to just do a little process check. We have our notice today for public testimony. We have picked up the sign-in sheet when the last witness testified, and I just want to double-check in the audience and see if there's anyone else who has come to offer public testimony on either legislative administration, legislative assembly, or legislative council today. Okay, there being none, please continue.
Okay. I'm going to talk about the publication, ORS publications program. It is an important piece of our operation. After the end of session, and you have moved on to other things, although not, I know, a lot of relaxation. It just ends up you're doing it in your district more than you're doing it in this building. We are charged by statute to produce the publications that come out of the laws that you pass, including the Oregon laws, which is basically the all of the different chapters that were signed, the bills that were enrolled, signed by the governor, went to the Secretary of State. First, we do advance sheets. They're just stapled provisions that get sent out early. You should get copies of those, and I believe you get a final copy of this as well to show which laws you passed during the session. But more significantly for us, since this is not the same labor-intensive process, is the compilation when we put together the ORS. This is about a 5 to 6 month process for us after session to take all of the changes, the amendments, the repeals, the new sections, and get them compiled into the previous version, the 2003 version, so that we can come out with the 2005 version of the Oregon Revised Statutes. We have been doing that since 1953 as well. Every 2 years, putting out a new set of codified statutory law, so a member of the public, a lawyer, a judge, can pick up this volume and say, this is where the law is at right now, barring any special sessions that may come along, you know, to change a few things in it during the interim. This part of the operation is very different from what we normally do, but it's very intertwined with our drafting duties. It's hard for me to imagine being a good drafter or even a good copy editor within our office if you did not also do the compilation process, because so many of our drafting rules are aimed at what's going to happen when we get to this stage of putting this thing together and how's it going to work, how's it going to fit together. It takes 5 or 6 months. We keep on our session employees, many of them, all the way through this process because we need them. I mean, it takes quite a few people to do it. It generates revenues, about 1.9 million is the anticipated revenues. And what we get from those revenues basically is the ability to keep that permanent staff, to keep those copy editors who are permanent long run, to basically fund it. So about 25% of our budget is other funds generated from the monies derived from publications. And I think we do a good job. We do have a private competitor who sells another version of the Oregon Revised Statutes, but it seems as though our customers like our format. There are other customers who might like theirs, but I think we're going to see some leveling out over time between the two products as time goes by, but for the time being, it's generating a good chunk of our budget and doing it on another funds basis so it doesn't come out of the general fund. The final program is the Legislative Publications Program, and that is basically the publication of the Oregon laws in the advance sheets. Also, self-funding. The price of these volumes are set by Legislative Council Committee. By statute, we're supposed to try to set them as close as possible to cost, what it is to cost to us, and we've been very successful over time. If at the end of the biennium we have more than $400,000 in the special revolving account, by reason of the revenues from this, it reverts to the general fund. Usually we break right around that $400,000 as far as the amount of money that's left at the end. The $400,000 gives us the startup money for the next publication cycle when we have to go out and start spending money again.
I recall from hearing this budget previously in Mr. Chamoff's presentation that there are others interested in doing these publications. What's the status of that dynamic?
Chair Johnson, members of the committee, the bottom line on the legal publishing business is that there's just one big publisher out there now, Quest Publishing. They have the great majority of the business. There are very small operations within the state who buy our database for particular purposes, but I think really there is no other on the horizon right now that I'm aware of anybody else who's trying to produce something like the ORS. It's labor intensive, it's expensive. I doubt if there would be a market for another publication of this type.
Representative Smith.
Just a curiosity, couldn't someone through the public records just make a request of that, get it on CD, and go out and publish it themselves?
Chair Johnson, Representative Smith, there are certain things that we do hold the copyright to within the ORS. You can see the organization chart on page 7 for our office. We're basically 62 positions, 45 FTEs. We have right now a senior staff attorney, Joan Robinson. We have 12 LC deputies. Within our administrative services, we have our administrative services manager, Deb. Cook, who is here, an accountant, receptionist, computer services coordinator. We have a publications indexer. That's a very hard job, I will tell you. Chad Colburn does a wonderful job with that. He produces the indexes not only for all the publications, but also for the bill index that you receive every day. We have a new program that seems to be working very well on that, seems to be doing a good job of getting it out. He's going to need some help, though, and we're going to need to try to get him, because his number of hours that he's been working to try to keep up has been phenomenal. Finally, we have the Publication Services Department. That is our copy editors, we have a permanent full-time team. We hire about 8 session copy editors come in to help out, get us through. They have to stay for an entire year, basically, to help us out. We tend to run some fairly high unemployment costs because of that, especially in hard economic times, and we had some difficulties with that during our last budget cycle.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. How do you back up all your information? Do you do it off-site?
Chair Johnson, Representative Smith, we actually do it on-site. We do not do it off-site at this point, if I'm not mistaken.
We do take it off-site.
Oh. The answer there being from Rich Inglis of Information Services that they do on occasion take it off-site for protection purposes, I'm sure.
Okay, so if the power shuts down and something happens to you folks, we do have this stuff stored somewhere else.
When that electrical box blows up.
Just checking. And you and I are out of work for 6 months while they fix it.
Just checking.
I know you have time issues. I'd be happy to go through the...
Mr. Hendricks, actually what we are going to do is to carry you over until tomorrow. It does a disservice and disrespects your office to rush you through the last pieces of this. So I think, in as much as this is sort of a natural break point, we are going to hold you over. You'll be first up tomorrow. Tomorrow we anticipate doing legislative revenue, legislative fiscal, and the Indian services. We know that Representative Butler will be joining us for the Indian Services testimony, and I'm going to make sure, Larry, that you notice him so that we're respectful of his time and he can get in and out. And so unless there are any further questions from the panel, we're going to hold over Mr. Hendricks and Legislative Council until tomorrow. I am going to close the public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 5046, the legislative branch agencies, legislative administration, legislative assembly, and legislative council, and remind everybody we're back here at 8:30 tomorrow morning. Thank you, Mr. Hendricks, and I apologize that we're going to take you over until tomorrow.
No problem.